Good evening. We begin tonight with multiple breaking news stories. In just a moment, we'll bring you new audio tapes obtained by two reporters with the New York Times. In them, you'll hear Republican Senator Lindsey Graham speaking on January 6, sharing his opinion of the former president and his behavior during the January 6 attacks. First, the other breaking story, primary matches in multiple states tonight, including a big one where polls just closed in West Virginia, providing a window, perhaps, into whether the former president's endorsement is enough to shape the party even more in his own image. The West Virginia matchup includes two Republican congressmen forced into a fight after redistricting. One, Congressman Alex Mooney, carries the endorsement of the former president. The other, Congressman David McKinley, the support of the state's popular Republican governor, and even the state's Democratic Senator Joe Manchin. In Nebraska tonight, a similar matchup, a candidate endorsed by the state's Republican establishment versus one endorsed by the former president and also facing a number of sexual misconduct allegations. As we do in these primary nights, let's go to John King at the Magic Wall in Washington. So what are you seeing out of West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District, and talk about why that race is so interesting?
So let's bring it up, Anderson. Two primaries in West Virginia, one we care about right here. You mentioned why. This is a Trump versus the establishment match. It's Alex Mooney versus David McKinley, both Republican incumbent congressmen. This is the first Republican incumbent in either party race we've had this year. As you mentioned, West Virginia lost a seat in the post-census reapportionment, so these two forced to run against each other. Trump endorsed Alex Mooney. He's a member of the House Freedom Caucus. He is the more conservative of these two House members, but the real reason is because of two votes from David McKinley. David McKinley likes the bipartisan approach when necessary. Voted for the Biden bipartisan infrastructure bill. Trump wanted Republicans to vote no. More importantly, from Trump's perspective, David McKinley voted for the independent commission initially proposed to look into the January 6th attacks. Donald Trump, of course, did not want that. So David McKinley to Donald Trump is persona non grata. You mentioned the establishment. Most of the state's Republican establishment is for Congressman McKinley. You see him with a narrow lead right now, but we're very early with 11% in. The Republican governor's for McKinley. So is the Democratic Senator Joe Manchin. Trump is for Mooney and pro-Trump forces in the Republican Party. We're just starting to count the votes, Anderson. 11% in, 219 vote lead for Congressman McKinley right now over Congressman Mooney. You can tell we're going to be at this a little bit. Everyone expected it to be a close race, and it starts out that way. We'll see if it continues.
In Nebraska, polls don't close for another hour.
Right. They don't close for another hour. And you set the stakes quite nicely. Again, you're going to hear this a lot. May is a very big month. Donald Trump had a good week in Ohio last week. Two contests tonight, the West Virginia one we just talked about, the Nebraska governor's race here. Let me bring it over to the governor's side here and look at the candidates. By the end of the month, we'll have a pretty good report card on Trump versus the establishment in these primaries. This is Trump's candidate, Charles Herbster. He's a businessman. He's a farmer. He's been with Trump for years, even before he got involved in this governor's race. He is accused, Anderson, by 9 women now of inappropriately touching them in recent years. He denies those allegations. Trump has said he did not believe them to be true. Herbster, in fact, has tried to suggest they come from the Republican establishment. Jim Pillen is endorsed by the incumbent governor, Governor Ricketts. He's term limited, can't run again. He has sparred with Trump repeatedly over the years. This is Pillen versus Herbster. In many ways, it's Trump versus Ricketts, if you will. Trump versus the establishment Republican governor now. The interesting thing here is there is a third candidate who has polled pretty well, a more moderate candidate, State Senator Brett Lindstrom. So we'll have to watch this one play out. You mentioned the polls close at 9 o'clock tonight. Again, West Virginia and Nebraska tonight, Pennsylvania and Georgia by the end of the month. Donald Trump's sway in the Republican Party getting a big test in this month's primaries, including tonight.
We're going to continue to watch it as the numbers come in this hour and throughout the night. John King, thank you. Keeping with former president's influence on the party. New audio tapes we want to play you now. Another high-profile Republican in Congress speaking away from the public on January 6th about his own personal beliefs involving the former president and his behavior on that day, January 6. This time, Senator Lindsey Graham. Like similar tapes that we broadcast, they come from the reporting of two New York Times reporters and CNN political analysts Alex Burns and Jonathan Martin, and their new book, This Will Not Pass, Trump, Biden, and the Battle for America's Future. They join me now. So, Jonathan, you interviewed Senator Graham on January 6 after the Capitol had been attacked, and I want to just play some of the audio of that interview.
We'll actually come out of this thing stronger. Moments like this reset. It'll take a while. People have calmed down. People are, I don't want to be associated with that. This is a group within a group. And what this does, there'll be a rallying effect for a while where the country says we're better than this.
And Biden will help that, right?
Yeah, totally. He'll be maybe the best person to have, right? How bad can you get it, Joe Biden?
So if you compare January 6th Lindsey Graham to the Lindsey Graham of today, how stark are the differences? Because we should point out that Lindsey Graham went publicly said that he had, you know, he hated the way it ended with him and Trump, but he'd had enough.
Yeah, you can almost hear in his voice, Anderson, Senator Graham, trying to sort of play out what the impact of this attack, which, as we talked, was still sort of ongoing as we spoke that afternoon on the 6th in a secure location after the Capitol was evacuated. The Capitol Police was still trying to clear the Capitol in those moments, but Graham's already thinking ahead. He's thinking about the political impact on his party and thinking about the impact on the country. And could this be a 9/11 style moment where the country rallies together? And who better to lead the country than a conciliatory figure like the new president, Graham's old friend, Joe Biden? And my goodness, those two assumptions in the days and weeks later, Anderson, would obviously prove to be errant. The country did not come together after January 6th. It, in fact, deepened the partisan divisions, and Joe Biden was not able to rally the country because he is sort of one more partisan actor on the political scene in this tribal moment that we're living through in this country.
Is it clear to you what made Graham flip back? Because, I mean, I think, I can't remember, it was the next day he flew out in the airport and he was heckled by people at the airport. And he seemed upset by that. We should point out, we reached out to Senator Graham's office today to see if he believes the things he said. He says he stands by them, or if he stands by them, they responded in part saying, quote, "Senator Graham has said that the Joe Biden we see as president is not the one we saw in the Senate. He's pursued a far left agenda as president." He wouldn't say whether he stands by, you know, the audio.
Yeah, so look, I think Senator Graham, like a lot of Republicans in the days and weeks after January 6th, as we capture in great detail in this book, they thought that maybe this was it, and maybe it was time to turn the page, and just maybe their voters were willing to turn the page from Donald Trump and kind of put the last 4 years behind them. And I think what happened, Anderson, is whether it was in the airports or via email or calls or old-fashioned letters, GOP lawmakers like Lindsey Graham found out their voters didn't want to move on, and they didn't feel particularly exercised about January 6th, and they weren't enamored at all with Joe Biden, and they wanted to keep the party's embrace of Donald Trump going. And I think once people like Graham and Kevin McCarthy figured that out, it was back to normal, and normal was sticking with Donald Trump.
Alex, Senator Graham said that people won't want to be associated with what happened January 6th. That clearly hasn't happened. I mean, House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy, who said the former president bared responsibility for the insurrection, is now calling the former president the Republican secret weapon, suggesting he could be president again. Does all of this come down to his influence at the ballot box?
Yeah, Anderson, I mean, even setting aside the irony of calling Donald Trump a secret anything, I do think it comes down to his influence in the ballot box. It's what you and John were talking about at the top of the show. When you look at Trump's influence in intra-Republican Party politics, the voters are still clearly more with him than certainly against him, and more with him than they're with any other individual leader. And one of the big challenges that we outline in the book for Republicans who are uncomfortable with Trump or privately even sharply critical of him is, how do you try to lead the party in a direction that is distinct from sort of Trump's day-to-day edicts, but that doesn't lead directly into conflict with him? I think what you heard in Lindsey Graham's voice on that tape, the kinds of things that we quote in the book, him saying on that day, there was this hope that it would just kind of happen organically, right? It's the same hope that Mitch McConnell expressed on the night of the January 6th attack. Trump has discredited himself, and the public can all see that now. It turns out that a whole lot of the public still doesn't see that today.
Alex, I want to play another clip of Senator Graham from that day.
He's misjudged the passion. You know, he plays the TV game, and he went too far here. That rally didn't help. Talk about, you know, primarying us, and he created a sense of revenge.
Do you think that sense of revenge has abated at all?
No, it certainly has not. And when you look at how Trump has chosen to engage in the 2022 midterm election, so much of it is driven by personal retribution, taking vengeance on people like Liz Cheney, who broke with him over the 2020 election and the insurrection, taking vengeance even on someone like Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia. He's no moderate Republican, no critic of Donald Trump, but he wouldn't try to overturn the results of a free and fair election. And so politically, he is dead to Donald Trump. I think it's very, very important, Anderson, in that clip we just heard. You hear Lindsey Graham saying something that is very similar to what we report elsewhere in the book, Kevin McCarthy said in the aftermath of January 6th, which is drawing a straight line between irresponsible rhetoric and actual acts of violence. And that is one of those dynamics that in those days, Republican Party leaders were willing to acknowledge and really wrestle with and maybe even try to do something about. Today, they just simply won't even engage that dynamic as a question.
I want to play what the former president said on January 6th about Congresswoman Cheney that Senator Graham was actually referencing. Let's play that.
We got to get rid of the weak Congress people, the ones that aren't any good, the Liz Cheneys of the world. We got to get rid of them. We got to get rid.
So he talked about that created a sense of revenge.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Anderson, I think that's a crucial moment, not only in January 6th, not only in this book, but I think in recent American history, you know, singling out the daughter of the former vice president by name at a rally that would lead to the storming and attempted, insurrection at the U.S. Capitol that day. Obviously, it has shaped Liz Cheney ever since then. And you heard Senator Graham on tape. He was not alone. A lot of lawmakers heard Trump mention Cheney by name and were appalled that he would do that before a crowd that turned out to be a mob. And I think it put people's lives in jeopardy. It certainly put Liz Cheney's life in jeopardy. She now has to have security service because of the threats against her, as we detail in the book. And so I think, you know, a lot of the sort of climate that the GOP has sort of fostered today, you can really trace back to that speech Trump gave the morning of January 6th. And I think what has happened is a lot of people in the party's old guard thought that that would be the trigger. That would be it. Finally, it would be okay to walk away from Trump. The party would have had enough. And it just turns out that those leaders were wrong. They didn't get their own voters. Their voters were not tired of Trump, and they are still happily in his embrace today.
And Anderson, it was just moments after that speech at the Capitol, just a short while after that, Liz Cheney, after evacuating from the House, turns to a colleague and says, we need to impeach the son of a bitch. And I think that she was probably surprised not long after that to find how few other Republicans were willing to join her.
Yeah, that's for sure. Alex Burns, Jonathan Martin, fascinating reporting as always. Thank you. Just ahead, a massive new aid package for Ukraine featuring money for weapons, medicine and more is expected to pass sometime tonight. We'll have the latest on that and what's in it, as well as a live report on the fighting in Ukraine. Also, some gripping new video of a defiant 21-year-old medic inside that massive steel plant in Mariupol. She says they will fight to the end. Plus new dash camera video of the arrest of the fugitive inmate Casey White and new details on what he and the corrections officer were doing before they were caught. And she died after authorities say she sustained a self-inflicted gunshot wound. More AC360 to come after the break. Tonight, the House is expected to pass a massive Ukraine aid bill worth nearly $40 billion. It would then go to the Senate, of course, and then eventually reach President Biden's desk. It's meant to provide training and weapons and intelligence to Ukrainian forces, also money for refugee assistance, housing, public health and medical support. It is obviously an enormous amount of aid, and it does have bipartisan support. Voting on the bill in the House comes on a day when lawmakers heard new and alarming testimony about the latest U.S. intelligence on Vladimir Putin's intentions. The bottom line, according to the director of national intelligence, Avril Haines, the war is likely to drag on and make it a lot worse.
The uncertain nature of the battle, which is developing into a war of attrition, combined with the reality that Putin faces a mismatch between his ambitions and Russia's current conventional military capabilities, likely means the next few months could see us moving along a more unpredictable and potentially escalatory trajectory.
The director of national intelligence also said there are indications that Vladimir Putin could eventually declare martial law in Russia, but she pointed out it's difficult to predict what may happen next. Today, we also heard more defiance from Ukrainian fighters. This video is of a 21-year-old woman, a combat medic inside that massive steel plant in the port city of Mariupol. Her message, the plant's defenders will fight to the last.
Can I say that I will shoot the knees of those who spread information that I am already gone? Guys, we are at war here. I'll outlive all of you. Mariupol. Well, the only thing I can say is that we're holding on. As long as they are here, we're fighting to the last. Stars burn up, and we will live forever, guys. Just like Mariupol, Ukraine. It's forever. Everything will be fine. Everything will be Ukraine.
More from the plant as well tonight, and we warn you the images are graphic. Photos believed to be of soldiers holed up in that steel plant. They were posted on a public channel on Telegram. You can see some are missing limbs. Conditions are clearly unsanitary. A deputy commander today said that many of the soldiers inside the plant are badly wounded. Also, top aide to President Zelensky said there are still about 100 civilians trapped inside the plant as well. Further west in Ukraine, along the Black Sea coast in the south, more images tonight of the damage being done by Russian attacks. This is the city of Odessa. It was a shopping center. A new UN report states that more than 8 million Ukrainians are now internally displaced. It's almost one in five of Ukraine's entire population before the war, many fleeing from the intense fighting in the east. And that's where we begin tonight's reporting. Joining us from Kramatorsk, our senior international correspondent, Sam Kiley. So Russia is now reported to have used hypersonic missiles in attacks on Odessa. What are you learning on how big of a possible game changer that might be in this conflict?
I think these hypersonic weapons are new. They are the first wartime use of this very spectacular new technology. Supersonic, effectively, weapons that are pretty impossible to bring down using the sort of anti-aircraft missiles that the Ukrainians have, or indeed the United States have. So a very worrying development, that the confirmation that they've used these weapons. They've claimed to have used them in the past. The issue will be the volume of them and the accuracy. Now, we don't know whether they were aiming at what they hit in Odessa. There have been more accurate hits around the country occasionally by cruise missiles, but there's been an awful lot of very inaccurate use of precision weapons and, of course, lots of dumb bombs here, indicating really that the depth of the Russian armed forces are not as strong as they might have hoped. And that's certainly not what Putin had been told. And what they're coming up against on the other side, though, in Ukraine, is no lack of depth, Anderson, in the passion. We heard from that 21-year-old medic there, and I've been out on the front line talking to other young people who've answered the call to arms for their country.
Oh, it's a bunny.
Yeah.
Bunny the tank.
Yeah, so it's Bunny the tank.
He's got quite a carrot.
Yeah.
Bunny's got a very big stick. This T-80 tank was built 2 years ago and was, until March, in the vanguard of Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
So down below you see an autoloader. It's also slightly modernized to shoot more like advanced and like better rounds. It can shoot guided missiles.
Alex was on a sniper team when he discovered Bunny, stuck and abandoned in a field in March, 8 days into Russia's assault. Within days, the tank was back in action against Russians.
This is like my personal tank. I'm tank commander and tank owner.
In March, he says the tank destroyed 24 Russian vehicles and two tanks.
We're fighting like near Izum. So here we already destroyed three or four enemy tanks. Like, we have three confirmed and four is like not fully confirmed that it was our kill.
That was in the previous couple of days when Russian forces tried to break through Ukraine's lines in the bitter battle for the east.
Showing like the thermal side.
Alex isn't a professional soldier. He's a software engineer who lived in the now smashed IT hub of Kharkiv. His home has been destroyed. Bunny's being serviced as the battle rages a few miles away. Burning fields encroach on the tank's hideout. The front line in Ukraine is hundreds of miles long.
For many Ukrainian soldiers on this front line, there's a sense that perhaps the Russians haven't yet brought their full destructive power to bear. But they expect to find out this week.
Russia's artillery is relentless, and Putin's tanks are massing. This army of volunteers is expecting a hard Russian push. Anna's 22. She's been a soldier for a month, and now she's a driver in a reconnaissance unit.
There is a lot of opportunities to be killed.
She just graduated from university.
The thing that makes me the angriest is raped children and women.
Is that something that you're afraid of happening to you?
I can't say that I'm afraid of something like that. I'm afraid to be not useful for my country, for my people.
This is what being useful here means, killing Russians. Russians Anna's age. But this is a war thrust upon Ukrainians. Anna works with Vlad, a poet, author, publisher, and war vet.
On reconnaissance is a highly dangerous work. Have you lost many comrades, friends?
Vlad said, since 2014, so many of my friends, people I knew, comrades, have died. So far, the people I came with since the beginning of the latest invasion have not died, and I'm very happy. It's cool. These people are still fighting. They're already in charge of units. It's awesome. The best of the best are here. His books are dark fantasies set in this war with Russia, an all too rich source of material.
Sam, it's amazing the guy who has that personal tank that he basically just kind of rehabbed himself and brought back to the fight. From the people you spoke with, do they talk about how long they expect to be fighting? How long they expect this war to continue?
Well, these young people, the people who are new to the fight, know that those who are more veterans, like Vlad there, have been fighting on and off since 2014. So they know, in this country, as you know very well yourself, when you came here frequently now, Anderson, people have been fighting since 2014. This is not a new war. It's an escalation of the war that they were already engaged in, is the attitude that the Ukrainians take. But what they do now have, which they didn't have in 2014, is the help and training of NATO forces over previous years, the substantial amounts of new weapons that are coming in that will be arriving at these important front lines momentarily. And of course, a lot of those tank killing equipment has also been strategically important and used at a tactical level. And we're also seeing the Ukrainians pushing back substantially around the city of Kharkiv. They've had a counterattack there, driving the Russian forces almost back to the Ukrainian-Russian border. And indeed, we've now got reports that the Russians are having to race reinforcements to that location to try to protect their supply line. So this whole battle still hangs in the balance. And I think that's also why we're seeing these worrying signals coming from intelligence in the United States, because the reaction of Putin to being put on a back foot could indeed ultimately make him more dangerous. There is always the threat of nuclear power hanging over these young people, as well as everybody else in the country. So the future for the young here, as they come out of university, come out of high school, is in the army. They don't really look any further than that at the moment. Anderson?
Sam Kiley, be careful. Thank you. Now to Caitlin Collins in Washington. Caitlin, I assume the White House agrees with the comments from the Director of National Intelligence that the war could get more unpredictable and worse these next few months.
Yeah, but their big question is, what does that mean? Because unpredictable but escalating is obviously of great concern for them. And so what officials are really trying to figure out right now is what Putin's next move is going to be. And some of the things that they've raised is potentially having him declare martial law, or maybe try to intercept some of these shipments of weapons that are going into Ukraine from the United States and other nations. Obviously, those have been critical, and some U.S. officials have speculated about why Putin hasn't targeted those more directly in the last several months or so. They're looking out for him to do that. Potentially, they also have other questions about whether or not he tries to retaliate for the economic sanctions in a significant way, the ones that have only increased, not just from the United States, but also from European nations as well. And I think, Anderson, one other question they have is what he's going to do to achieve what he wants to achieve on the ground. Does that require some sort of full mobilization of forces from Russia? That was something that they were kind of looking for in the speech that he delivered on Monday, and he didn't announce that, but it is still something that they could predict could potentially happen in the next several weeks.
There's also the nearly $40 billion emergency aid package to Ukraine that Congress is now voting on tonight. What's the latest on that vote?
It's hard to overstate what a massive package this is, Anderson. $40 billion, which is $7 billion more than what the White House had initially asked for when they said they believed they'd need about $33 billion. And so when and if this passes the House, which we were assured by House Democrats who met with President Biden earlier that it will pass the House tonight, and then you'll see the Senate looking to take it up quickly. But once that final passage happens and it makes its way over here to the White House, it'll be over $50 billion in spending that Congress has authorized to basically mainly arm Ukraine. You can see there are other means here where it's going to economic assistance or humanitarian assistance. Those are things that Ukraine has struggled greatly with. But look at for military equipment alone. They felt the need to boost that from what the White House had initially asked for. And if this isn't just something that Democrats are in favor of, this is a pretty bipartisan issue. And you heard Senator Lindsey Graham predicting earlier there will likely be more of these because, in his view, he said defeating Putin is priceless.
Caitlin Collins, appreciate it. Thanks. Next, there's breaking news on the capture of escaped Alabama inmate Casey White. Indiana police just released dash cam video of his arrest, and new details are revealed about what he and the corrections officer he was with had on them on their 10 days on the run. More breaking news. Just moments ago, police in Evansville, Indiana, released dash cam video of Casey White's arrest. The manhunt for him and corrections officer Vicky White ended with a car chase, as you know, there last night. Authorities say that Vicky White died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound after they were caught. CNN's Omar Jimenez has new developments.
Where are they?
The final moments of a manhunt heard through police dispatch.
They're calling you to 911.
Only one shot was fired.
The female suspect shot herself. The male suspect gave up.
An Indiana sheriff says numerous weapons, wigs, and $29,000 in cash were found inside the car.
There were at least four handguns, semi-automatics, 9mm, so any one of these weapons could have been used to ambush our officers.
Police chased the pair in southern Indiana after their car was spotted in a motel parking lot by an Evansville police officer.
Members of the U.S. Task Force basically rammed the vehicle and pushed it into a ditch. And we later found out, had they not done that, the fugitive was going to engage in a shootout with law enforcement.
The fugitive, Casey White, was driving. Vicky White was found in the car and died just hours later after law enforcement said she shot herself as the pursuit ended.
She was unconscious with the gunshot wound to her head, and the male suspect gave up without incident.
Tuesday, Casey White waived his extradition hearing in Indiana, saying he wanted to go back to Alabama.
When we bring him back, he will immediately go before the judge and transported directly to the Department of Corrections.
The pair, who are not related, disappeared from an Alabama jail April 29th after Vicky White told colleagues she was taking the inmate, Casey White, to the courthouse for a mental health evaluation. They never got there, and no such evaluation had been scheduled. Authorities later found her patrol car abandoned in a shopping center parking lot.
She arranged, purchased the getaway car. She sold her house, got her hands on cash. You know, she went shopping, bought clothes for him. Obviously put the plan together.
Then the pair fled in a pickup truck, which was later spotted at a car wash in Indiana, then transferred to a Cadillac, which was spotted about a week later at a nearby motel.
Sheriff, do you have any idea what they were doing here for a week?
Well, I think he said that he was just trying to find a place to hide out and lay low. And they thought, you know, they'd driven long enough that they wanted to stop for a while, get their bearings straight, and then figure out their next place to travel.
The manager at the motel said he didn't recognize them when law enforcement showed him their photos.
The guests they were looking, nobody was here under that name. So we do not know whether they stayed at my hotel or not.
There's a lot of questions that won't be answered until we have a much deeper investigation.
Omar Jimenez joins us now from Evansville, Indiana. So I understand there's been additional body cam video released by the Evansville Police Department tonight.
Yeah, Anderson. So this newest body camera video shows officers responding to the crash itself, trying for an excruciating, at least over 5 minutes, to try and get Vicky White out of this mangled vehicle, which, as we know, law enforcement rammed it at the end of this particular chase. Now, according to law enforcement, at this time, she had already shot herself. And you even hear in the audio of this body camera video when the officer first walks up, another one tells him she's still got the gun in her hand and points down to it. When they eventually are able to get her out of this vehicle, that's when they begin performing medical procedures. But as we now know, she later was declared dead and her body was completely limp at the time. And with that death declaration, her true motivation for masterminding this, as the Lauderdale County Sheriff put it, may have died with her. Casey White made it out of that particular crash with minor bruising. His extradition to Alabama, though, may mark the end officially of what has been a more than 10-day saga on the run, Anderson.
Yeah, Omar Jimenez, appreciate it. Thank you. Coming up, we return to John King at the Wall on this primary day. Results are coming in from West Virginia, where polls have closed, a state that's testing the endorsement power of the former president up to the minute vote totals after the break. Returning back to the primary matches today as we await results from West Virginia and Nebraska. Polls closed in West Virginia last hour, and polls in Nebraska will close in just a couple of minutes. And today's primaries will also give another sign of just how much of a hold the former president has over the GOP and the weight of his endorsement. CNN Chief National Correspondent John King is at the Magic Wall in Washington. So let's check in with West Virginia again. What's the latest?
The latest, Anderson, is that the Trump-backed candidate, Congressman Alex Mooney, has opened up. You see an 11-point lead there over the other Republican incumbent, David McKinley. Now, this is the first time this primary season we have two House incumbents running against each other. That's because of the post-census reapportionment. West Virginia lost a seat. So you see right now, remember, this was one of Trump's best states. He got 68-69% of the vote against Joe Biden in West Virginia. He is incredibly popular. He endorsed Alex Mooney. The district is here in the northern part of the state here. Mooney has pulled ahead. It was back and forth very early on, but he's had a lead. Now it's 3,500 votes and some change. But we're not quite to the halfway mark yet, so we'll have to keep counting the votes there as we go forward. Here's the big dividing line. McKinley voted for the Biden bipartisan infrastructure bill. McKinley voted for the independent commission to look into the January 6th attacks. Donald Trump didn't like either of those votes, so he backed Mooney. That's what we're watching play out tonight. The state's Republican governor, most of the Republican establishment, is behind Congressman McKinley, who wears that bipartisan infrastructure vote, by the way, Anderson, as a badge of honor back home. He says it's going to bring billions and it's going to bring jobs, but Mooney says he shouldn't have done it. Joe Manchin, the Democratic senator, also for McKinley. Trump for Mooney. At the moment, Trump had a good week last week in the Ohio primary. At the moment, he's doing well in West Virginia, but we'll keep counting.
Did either of these candidates have a geographical advantage going into it since it's a newly formed district?
You would have to say that McKinley does, in the sense that if you go back to the old districts, Mooney's district did something like this. It was down here. There were three, and they cut it to two. Mooney's district went down here and had this part here. But this part, more than about 60%, if you will, of the new district was in McKinley's old district. So you'd have to say geographically he's campaigned. He's won those votes before. But remember, Trump especially, he won every county. Trump won every county in West Virginia. So the Trump endorsement helps, even if this part here, Mooney's running for the first time.
Yeah. John King, thanks so much. Up next, more on the new audio tape of Republican Senator Lindsey Graham talking about the former president on January 6th about the insurrection. We'll get reaction from David Gergen, who served four presidents and who has a new book on leadership, something that you could argue is a big focus right now. We'll be right back. We've got a lot of breaking news tonight tied to politics. We continue to watch for Republican primary races results in West Virginia and Nebraska. There's also the new audio tapes from another high-profile Republican on Capitol Hill, Lindsey Graham, sharing his own thoughts about the former president on January 6th. Joining us for his perspective on all of this is CNN senior political analyst David Gergen, who served four presidents on both sides of the aisle. He's also the author of a new book, Hearts Touched with Fire, How Great Leaders Are Made. It's great to see you, David.
Thank you, Anderson. Thanks for being here. Glad to see you back safely.
The book is about leadership. As these primary results come in West Virginia, we're seeing whether the former president, for better or worse, right, still has the pull in the Republican right. Party, still has the say. There are a lot of Americans who look at him and say he is a great leader. I mean, you've just written a book about great leaders. What are they not getting?
He's not a great leader. I mean, he is a leader. There's no question about that. But I think he's a bad leader. I think he's leading his people into, leading the country, especially into a very bad place. And, you know, we look to leaders as more responsible adults, and he's simply not. You know, there are some things, some strengths he brings to the table. He's tough, you know, and I think in comparison to Joe Biden, he comes across as tougher, and that's what some people are looking for now. And I do think that he knows how to seize on issues and blow them up. But in terms of what we look for in a leader, it's much more about character. We also look to the courage question, and we look at the capabilities, sort of the three C's.
Where does the heart touched by fire come from?
That's a very interesting question. Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., who came from a very prominent family in Boston, and when Lincoln issued his call for volunteers, Holmes could have ducked. It was easy for him to get out of it, just like Teddy Roosevelt's father got out of it, you know. But instead he volunteered, and he was grievously wounded three times. Left for dead on the battlefield the last time out. And 20 years later, he gave a speech looking back about what the Civil War represented for his generation. And he said, you know, it is given to man to live the passions of his time. And we live those passions. And we were fortunate enough to have hearts touched by fire. Wow. That's where That's the quote lovely. Comes from. But so it is a really meaningful quote to me.
In terms of leadership, I mean, how do you see where we are now in this country?
I think we're in an unsustainable path. I've compared it to being in a car on the edge of a cliff in middle of the night with it raining and no headlights. And
that sounds pretty awful.
Well, it is. I think that's pretty well where we are. I think we could go over that cliff pretty easily. You know, authoritarianism comes earlier than some people suspect. And you know, I think this the very idea that in 2024 we may have two men running against each other, Biden and Trump, who would both be in their 80s if elected. That, too, is enough to say, well, what are we doing here? You shouldn't be 80 years old running the country. There are many great things you can do. But as you know so well, Anderson, the presidency is a very, very complex place. And you have to have good judgment. You have to have thought about issues before. You have to have a sense of moral purpose in leadership. I really don't think the people who are in charge now, who are going to be in their 80s, not just in the White House but in the Congress and so forth, I think it's time to pass the baton.
You write about this in the book. You write about passing the torch to the next generation, millennials, Gen Z.
Well, I really believe I've had the experience of working in classrooms now and teaching classrooms for maybe a quarter of a century. And what I have seen there has really given me encouragement about the long-term prospects for the country. I'm a short-term pessimist, but a long-term optimist. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I say that, yes, I know the millennials. Many people think they're arrogant, they're elitist, they are snobs, that they have had been privileged all the way along, and they have low, they don't have much sort of a drive. But that's true of some. But I must tell you now, I think there are two streams of people who are coming in, who are millennials, young millennials, who really impressed me. One is a group of veterans coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq. I work closely trying to help recruit veterans to run for office on both sides of the aisle with an outside group. And I'm seeing terrific people coming back through the veterans group. They remind me so much of the World War II generation, which to me, that's when I went to Washington. They were in charge, and I've been in love with that generation ever since. But the other group is more of a surprise, and that is the young people, especially in this country, young black women, have taken the moral high ground. They're really showing us the way. And I think, I don't agree with their politics on a lot of issues, but I really salute their drive, their ambition for change.
Do you believe President Biden should run again in 2024?
Sadly, I think for a variety of reasons he should not. I don't think either Trump or Biden should be running. My preference is run toward Biden, of course. But nonetheless, I do think it's time for a younger person. I think there are things that Joe Biden can do that would be extremely valuable. He can be on hand. He can give advice. He can travel the world and do things like that for a new president. But given the complexity of that office, if your judgment is not keen, you shouldn't be there. Mm. And look, I just turned 80, and I can tell you, you miss a step. You're not quite as sharp as you once were, and I think that's a real problem to be in the Oval Office. I don't think the country ought to be faced with that.
I'm just about to turn 55. I feel the same way. I'm like, well, just about myself. I mean, I'm already noticing, like, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But I never thought I'd live this long.
But it does make a difference. And I think the country is basically in good place. I think the people of this country are much more together. And I think if you talk to historians like John Meacham, for example, he'll tell you, look, we've had existential threats before, four or five times. And in all of those situations, whether it's the birth of the Republic when Washington was in real trouble, he lost for the first 6 out of 8 battles, or you go on to, you can skip over to the Great Depression or World War II. We did well in all of those. The one we screwed up was the Civil War, obviously. Mm-hmm. And there I think that, but overall, that should give us encouragement. We need to pull together and live together and listen to each other in new ways. And I think we can pull the country out of this mess.
We'll end on that note. David Gergen, thank you so much. The book is Hearts Touched with Fire, How Great Leaders Are Made. It is out now. David Gergen, it's great to
thank
see you.
Thank you. You're very kind.
Up next, an update on the primary races in West Virginia and Nebraska, both testing the former president's grip on the Republican Party. We'll be right back. Quick look at the primary race in West Virginia, where polls have closed. We have more results. So far, the Trump-backed Congressman Alex Mooney is leading in the West Virginia second congressional race over David McKinley with 55% of precincts in. Alex Mooney has 51.7% of the vote. David McKinley, 38.1%. We'll continue to follow the numbers as they come in. Let's hand it over to Laura Coates and CNN Tonight.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.